Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Heck yes.
Justin Robert Young.
Hey, it's me.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody. That's me.
So, gentlemen, I have it's not good news. This is sort of depressing kind of news. Paul Allen, who was one of the founders of Microsoft, who was a very amazing guy, probably a polymath in many, I'm just interested in many fields and just a very super talented guy, and was a big advocate for space research and had the company, started the company Stratolaunch, which goal was to be, you know, if you looked at like what were the three big private bets on space exploration, you had SpaceX, Blue Origin, and then Stratolaunch was another one. And there's, you know, Virgin Space is cool, but, you know, they were involved with like Stratolaunch, I believe. And Stratolaunch's idea was, let's build like the largest airplane in the world and use that to bring rockets to a high altitude, then drop the rocket and let the rocket go on up in space. The pro and con, the pro of that is, using a plane to launch gives you access to different orbits than just putting a launch pad on the East Coast or the West Coast. That's one of the advantages of an airplane launch. You can have a faster access to launch because you're not necessarily waiting for the launch pad to be available. There were some advantages to that. And originally they first announced they were going to work with SpaceX and put like, I think like a Falcon 5, which when that was going to be a thing on there. And that ended up not happening, but they were still continuing on because there was a role for this to play. And they finally launched the airplane. They got it working.
And by the way, for those who haven't seen the pictures, Google Stratolaunch airplane. It is the coolest, funkiest thing. It's like two 737s holding hands in the sky. Yeah. It's amazing.
It is. Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing thing. Well, Paul Allen sadly passed away. And with that was a question of what happens to Stratolaunch, because he was just kept funding it because it was not, you know, revenue positive. And it looks like Stratolaunch is going to shut down.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's man, it's like it is every bit as ambitious and insane and as crazy a story as the Spruce Goose. What a bummer. I always want the crazy people to be proven right, yeah, says the crazy person.
Well, yeah. It also just shows you how dependent on these personalities, not only in terms of money, but also in terms of force of will, a lot of this space exploration is. Like, this is definitely like at the behest of the Paul Allens and Elon Musks and Jeff Bezoses of the world, that they want to do this to the point where, you know, as we are still building the kind of space economy, if it's not if that person isn't there, then it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting too is, like, you know, we've talked about SpaceX has their the McGregor facility, right? That's where they were doing like the testing the different the Grasshopper and all that. And that came about because I forget the name of, there was another guy in the 90s who was a big space, you know, entrepreneur who invested a lot of money into trying to develop space, you know, rockets. And he'd actually built up the infrastructure out there, and then it wasn't able to, you know, see life, you know, the company failed. And then SpaceX was able to, I believe, buy that pretty cheap, you know, and so it was sort of was a big help for SpaceX.
That's one of the things that, you know, I'm not here to preach for capitalism, but one of the stated benefits of capitalism is that the failures subsidize the successes. And that was a failed a journey for somebody, but that ended up being instrumental to bring us SpaceX as we know it today.
Mm-hmm. So let me see. What was this? Trying to look up the history of that. Anyhow, but I mean, yeah, that's the thing, is you can pick up the assets, you pick up there and you move on, as you pointed out. And it's an expensive Beale Aerospace. That's right. I wanted to give credit to that. And I guess before that, it was used for the Blue Bonnet Ordnance Plant. So there was a whole history to that. But, you know, it's sad. But, yeah, and we'll see. Hopefully, you know, there's some amazing technology and things like that Stratolaunch worked on, and a lot of great engineers and stuff and people there. So I feel bad for that. You know, it was and somebody always thought was crazy, but like you said, we love the crazy sort of approach because it's not that crazy, you know.
So along those same lines about somebody who spent a lot of money and then other people come in and get to spend less money, I guess there's two stories that you just reminded me of. One is there's an awful lot of ticked off Tesla owners who blocked off a factory in somewhere in Europe. Did you read about this?
No.
Yeah, they basically they all paid a certain amount and then there's a big old Model 3 price drop and they're all like, well, hey, we're literally going to block your workers' access to the front by parking our Teslas in the way and making a big stink. And I think from what I read, they did have a bit of a point in that they were promised the free upgrades to, mm-hmm. you know, full whatever, and now they're not getting it or they feel like they got screwed because of the sudden price drop, which this is the first time that I've seen a backlash because previously I thought that everybody buying a Tesla kind of had it in their mind that what they're doing is they're helping to subsidize a more carbon neutral future.
Oh no. Yeah, there's been a number of things because when they've done price drops here, this frustrating, they went for a period where you could say when they first announced it, full self-driving was like a $7,000 add-on. And then later on, Tesla came out and said, oh, if you want to get it later, if you want to add it now, you can get it for like $3,000 or $2,000. And that caused a bit of an uproar over things. There've been, you know, that price moving, whatever, those things like that have there. If you follow on the Reddit forums, there's been a bit of that. Now, I've never seen a public display like this, though.
And I would imagine, especially because it feels like an intangible good in a way where when you buy an actual electric car, you're like, I'm helping to drive the future. Look at this thing that's made and the infrastructure to do it. But then if it feels more like you're, it's like, look, you guys have it. Just let me have it. Just let me press the button and have the upgrade. Why are you making me pay?
So I have a friend that he paid for full self-driving when he bought his. And I said, you know, I'm going to wait for full self-driving to be closer to coming out. And then they did a thing where they offered it at like $2,000 or something like that. I'm like, all right, I'll buy it. So then I bought it. So I paid like $3,000 or $4,000 less than my friend, who, to his credit, had your attitude, was an early adopter. Let me support them and help develop this. And I have that attitude to an extent. But when the owner of the company, who I admire, but has like three mansions in Bel Air, I don't think it's really necessary for me to look upon him as a charity case. And my friend was bothered, but then they offered them like, hey, you're going to get early access to some features and stuff to kind of ameliorate that. And so he gets stuff before I do with that. So, yeah, here's my thing. Can I just say this thing? Whenever somebody wants to protest by blocking a thing, like blocking entrances or highways or stuff, you lose my sympathy. I'm now against you.
Pretty much universally, huh?
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, there's like the – you know, not in this case, but sometimes it's like, taxi workers upset with Uber. They're going to shut down the streets in the city. It's almost like Uber's like, hey, how can we make people hate taxi drivers more? Okay, we'll pay a guy to pretend to be a taxi driver. He's going to show up in the meeting and go, you know what we need to do? Let's inconvenience everybody.
Yeah, you know, it is an interesting thing because I think the idea behind stuff like that is that protests are only X effective, right? And it's an interesting way to say like, okay, well, we'll make sure everybody has to hear our message by being that level of disruptive. But I'm kind of with you. Like at the end of the day, the protest is going to get out the word. You would hope that it also does not damage your cause.
That's just it. It's like, you know, if it's who are you? It's whoever you're inconveniencing is the thing. And if it's like, well, a bunch of Uber drivers shutting down the middle of the city, like, well, you're inconveniencing everybody except for Uber, you know, the people who, you know, and like here, shutting down the entrance, like, all right, like one, I have a problem with that as kind of form of hostage taking. But it's also like, these are the workers trying to get in out of there. You know, it's not affecting Elon, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, and Bryce taking to the chat with his "we need more convenient protest" take. I think all protests are PR, right? Like on some level, you are trying to get the word out, so everything has to, you know, you would hope that by the end of the protest, more people are aware and sympathetic to your cause, and you know, I think it's an interesting thing. It is an interesting question.
The sympathy is the thing, and I it's not a matter. It's think carefully who you're inconveniencing. You know, you want to inconvenience the people you want to cause the change, not the people you want on your side. But
so I got I got a second story in the same vein. Only this one seems to be a positive spin. Saw a Reddit top thread that says, quote, NASA is opening the space station to $35,000 a night visits. A tourist who paid Russia $30 million to get there a decade ago says it's, quote, a seismic shift.
Well,
who do you suppose was that tourist?
Oh, Dennis Tito.
No. No, it was our friend Richard Garriott, and Richard Garriott
had to give his seat to Tito to go first, and then Garriott went.
Correct, but it's funny to me that in the headline they did not use his name, but rather referred to him as a tourist who paid Russia. Even though like he's co-founder of Space Adventures, I don't know, it's so remarkable.
Yeah, no, just to be clear, that's the cost. To be on the station, you still have to pay for your trip to the station.
Oh, sure.
But yeah. I think we should be doing this. I think that I'm always more excited if we get more research institutions and stuff looking at the idea of doing this, you know, putting more scientists up there, et cetera. That's what excites me. But space station's expensive.
Well, specifically, I think Richard in this article was talking about how previously he had multiple NASA officials try to talk him out of the trip and multiple regulatory things changed just to block him from going. And we should get him on Weird Things and do a quick talk about that. That would be fun.
Yeah. He went through a lot. You know, we did a segment on him when we did our G4 series, and then there's a documentary on him too about this, and Brian knows him really well. And you know, you hear about, like, when we talk about the parochial nature of, like, NASA, it can be frustrating because there are a lot of wonderful people working there who are very much into space, promoting for everybody. And there are people there who think, no, it's our thing. This is our territory. And, you know, you get a guy like, you know, Richard Garriott, a super enthusiast for space, develops, you know, the company to help do space tourism and help fund space research, to help fund, you know, give money to Russia and the United States space programs and stuff, and treated like, you know, he's crashing some sort of party when, you know, NASA has no problem putting, you know, almost octogenarian senators and Saudi princes on board space shuttle flights because politically it's expedient. It's just drives me nuts.
Well, so how do you feel about the general decision to name a specific price and to say essentially open for business?
Great first step. You want to put a number on something. I think that I've made it clear. Obviously, I'm less excited about space tourism as I am about, you know, getting some really cool researchers from, you know, Johns Hopkins University working on some sort of stem cell research or something like that up there. But cool. I think it's awesome.
Man, how long?
Do you think that Yelp review is going to be like?
What's funny is I was just thinking, like, if we're going to place a bet in time before, how long until we have something happen that the media ends up dubbing the first space crime? And we have an incident, some people get into a fist fight or there's an assault or.
You know. Maybe it will happen, but that right now stuff is so locked down. So much stuff has happened that you have to talk to inside NASA people to hear about the thing that happened, because they put the space station's $100 billion project, right? And it takes billions of dollars every year to do that. And NASA does not want somebody to go in front of a Senate hearing and say, well, what about when this happened? Or what about this happened? And so they go out of their way. They have an immense ability to sort of change or mute things that happen. So We'll see. Like, hey,
so this sounds to me, reading between the lines, that there has already been a space crime, and they have very effectively kept it quiet.
You know, we've talked about this before, that it wasn't a mutiny, Skylab mutiny kind of thing. You know, that was going back to then when you had, you know, you guys, the astronauts in the Skylab, who said, hey, we're working too much, whatever, we're going to take a little time off, and you get conflicting accounts like, oh, that wasn't what happened, it wasn't this. You read the transcripts, you look at this like, I don't know, this maybe sounded a little bit more. You had the Apollo astronauts, the whole postage stamp scandal. You know, they brought stamps to the moon and brought them back to sell them for tens of thousands of dollars.
I didn't hear about that. That's amazing.
Yeah, and so there's been a lot of these things that just, you know, kind of just sort of go away. You know, and then, you know, so.
Well, because ultimately it doesn't really benefit anybody who is in position to confirm it to make a big deal about it.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, to your point, Brian, that now that we're like just putting randos up there, then it's like, all right, well, maybe if some dude's a total doucher, like, will people say, like, yeah, he's awful and we need to never have him back in space again?
There was a shuttle incident, and again, I don't know how much is true or not, but a shuttle astronaut, a researcher who had spent years working on a project to bring it up on the shuttle, brought it up and it failed immediately. And the story is they basically had to put them on suicide watch.
Wow. Because
they were afraid this person, like, this person just went like bliss because it was the one thing they went there to go do. You know, like, maybe true, maybe not, but something to it. But we don't know much about it because,
man, true tales from space. I can't wait until everything's so much more frequent that we can actually just dive into you know, some of those stories in fullness.
I'm wondering.
There's stories that there's audio of the Challenger accident.
Holy smokes.
Oh my goodness. Whoa, that would be amazing.
No,
bad.
Under freedom of information should be accessible, but I've talked to people at NASA who say that it's legit and that it was that they were alive a lot longer than we said.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Maybe true, maybe not true, but because there's, you know.
I assume that this has to have happened, but nobody's made a fuss about it yet, but like a space groping incident, like somebody like, oh I'm trying to squeeze through.
There's gotta be, I mean, when you're up there, any kind, even if you're like of the utmost professionalism, like, people gotta hate each other, people gotta be, you know, all the things that come along with what would happen on a submarine, right? Like, just multiply it even more.
We talked about the astronaut couple that, like, were secretly married or whatever.
Yeah, they got married, like, the day before they went up in the space shuttle, and officially nothing happened. Mmm, that seems likely.
Right out of there, the romance textbook with Ted Bundy's courtroom marriage.
Yeah. Good for them.
So, yeah, but back to Brian, your earlier question, it's going to happen. Because, I mean, you know, the more, in this age, the more stuff that goes on there and the more people go up there and whatnot, we're going to get, you know.
So would you take the over or the under on, let's say, 4 years?
What do you mean by space crime, though?
Well, what I mean is a press flap, like, because I'm certain some kind of inappropriate space crime
has. You're thinking more space scandal.
Yeah, there, like, we go. Space scandal.
Space,
there you go.
Space crime, I think, yeah, there needs to be an authority that's like issuing a ticket or something, but you mean like shocking new details from space scandal broke.
Yeah, and I guess I'm also thinking about, like, of a level where they have to figure out whose jurisdiction it is, because it's an international effort and it's not on the planet. So if something is a crime in one area and not in another, you know,
if you're like. The moment this happens, you know, I'm Kim Kardashian's publicist saying, we got to get you and Kanye up there for a honeymoon and have another baby, a space baby.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's the level. And once you get to that level, who knows what can happen, you know?
Yeah.
Brian, are you thinking maybe it's like a civil lawsuit from an incident that began in space, like something that would be like kind of mundane, but, you know, it would leave tongues wagging.
Yeah, I guess the best thing to look at is the kind of things that happen on cruise ships and how soon we'll have one of those, and how soon it'll be like you said, Justin, a space scandal. I feel like less than 4 years. I think it'll be sooner than that.
I have some information on this.
Uh-oh. What you got?
This originally was answered by NASA space engineer and instructor Robert Frost regarding if you commit crime in space.
Yes.
With regard to criminal conduct, part of the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, it states Canada, the European partner states, Japan, Russia, and the United States may exercise criminal jurisdiction over personnel in or on any flight element who are their respective nationals. So I think that they treat people the way that they treat objects that are sent into space, which is that
they belong to the country.
They are the responsibility of the country who sends them up, yeah.
Oh, but what happens like in a space groping where it's a crime in one country and not the other?
In a case involving misconduct in orbit,
just the Gropistanian official.
Misconduct that affects the life or safety of a national of another partner state or occurs in or on or causes damage to the flight element of another partner state, the partner state whose national is the alleged perpetrator shall, at the request of any affected partner state, consult with such state concerning their respective prosecutorial interests.
So I guess it goes, I guess the nationality of the victim is what matters more.
Yeah, because then the affected state could say, hey, we need to figure out what to do here.
Right.
Huh.
And we can get into, too, like, if a groping, are you crossing a territorial line?
We are out of my jurisdiction for sure. And now that's
because groping that would be like a sexual harassment lawsuit, right? I mean this would be something that like, oh well, you, I don't know, did somebody goes up there and gropes the space maid or something like
the space maid.
Like then that would be like a civil lawsuit. I mean, I guess you might bring charges, right?
Can be criminal too, Justin.
It could be.
What about space libel or space slander? Where you're up there and you're just lying your face off and ruining the stock market.
That would be hilarious. Space slander. You're just saying all sorts of wild stuff that you just know it's like I'm willfully damaging this person's reputation.
Oh my God, Elon Musk could make illegal space tweets.
People kicked off of like YouTube and Twitter, you know, they start a space station.
Pranking my friend over on the Russian arm. Let's go.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't deplatform me now, can you?
Broadcast on ham radio station 10097. This is info prison planet. That's what you are. Slaves to gravity down there.
R.W. Bush is a deep state plant. You know, you want to make sure we're not deplatformed. We could use your help.
Heck yeah, man.
Head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/weirdthings. Not only can you support this little show, you can also get our After Things program, which is the show that we do after Weird Things, where we talk about entrepreneurship and all sorts of other fun stuff. Before anyone else, get your custom RSS feed. All you got to do is head on over there right now, patreon.com/weirdthings.
Gentlemen, I've got a heartwarming story for you.
You know what usually follows that? A very heartwarming story.
Yeah. Actually, it is. So I'm going to talk about a guy named James. James worked on the railroad in South Africa, okay? And he used to jump between rail cars to try to do his duties, etc. And then one day, James fell and lost a leg.
Mm.
Okay. Now, guy is an amputee, and all of a sudden, what is he supposed to do? Double leg amputee who wants to work on the railroad. Now, he's able to get, like, and this is back in the day. This is, we're talking like 100 years ago. So he's able to get, more than 100 years. We're talking like 140 years ago. So he's able to get, like, you know, like the wooden sort of the state of the art thing then, which is like oak peg legs or whatever. But he was a signalman, doesn't want to quit, doesn't want to lose his job. He needs help. He needs loyal help to help him work on the railroad.
Does he get a service animal to help him out?
He does. He does. But what service animal would you use?
Oh. So this is a double amputee wants to get around. Also, we do the Weird Things podcast. So I'm going to say a burro is out, a horse is out. I feel like there's less mass to carry around. So maybe you probably want a smart creature, and I'm going to put this out here. I'm going to say he got a service hog that he rides around.
No, remember, he's got to work on the rail.
Oh, on the...
So he's still working on the railway. He's got to switch signals and stuff or get them switched.
Oh, what does that mean to work on a railway? What's his job entail?
So you have a railroad, like going between cars, hopping off the train, hopping back on the train, or getting on and off the train.
Yeah.
A goblin?
I feel like that was a pretty big clue that we just got. You want something that'll hop up on the train and hop off the train.
Oh my god.
Is this dude riding a kangaroo around fixing
the railway? He's not riding the animal.
Okay.
He's in the pouch.
Although the animal would push him in his wheelchair.
Wait, what?
Ooh.
Is it a little monkey?
Little?
I mean a big old monkey.
How about a Chacma baboon? Jack the baboon worked on the rail helping out James Wide. Okay. Apparently, the baboon was paid 20 cents a day and half a bottle of beer each week.
Oh, my God.
He worked for the railway for 9 years assisting James Wide.
We got a there photo. You go. Oh, my God. Look at that baboon. Baboon. And look at James and his wooden legs.
He's got little dinner table legs.
Dude, this is a good. This is like a throwback Thursday, like photo.
This needs to be a movie. I would watch the hell out of this movie.
So apparently, every now and then, people would be on the train and they would complain, like, "I just saw a baboon go out there and throw the signal switch." And the baboon would go out and go switch for the train.
Oh, that's
and they said he never made a mistake in 9 years.
Wow. Wait, all right, hold on. He got paid 12 cents in a bottle of beer. Like, where did he put the money? Like, did he open a bank account?
He probably just spent it.
Oh, my gosh.
Apparently, he was extremely... the driver. Each time one of the drivers would give a signal, Jack would change the signal without once making an error.
Is like the cats. This is like the cats that they do at those railway stations in Japan, except they've employed this monkey instead of having mascots.
What's the cat thing? The cat thing is just a mascot?
Yeah. So they're like cats who live at the station, and they're like mascots and the station master, quote unquote. And so they live there. But this, it sounds like they... also used Jack to operate the railroad.
Jack would operate the railroad. They said he would sweep up the kitchen floor. He would remove trash. And they said he was also worked as night watchman. So anybody who'd imagine sneaking into the railroad, let's go into the telegraph office.
I could see this working as a partnership thing, because you don't need to... like when you have a dog who's really loyal, like they're looking at you for permission for everything, and then you could say like yes, no, and it's like they kind of get it. So it's like if he understood the tasks, I mean, obviously I don't think the baboon could work fully autonomously, but if basically he's working for the approval of our double amputee hero, then really all he's got to do is, you know, like this one and you know, shake his head no, this one yes, and then so I totally could see this working. That's remarkable.
Well, apparently they look at, like, they could, fearing for her safety, this is what a woman reported in her fellow passengers, incidents reported authorities in Cape Town, who at first could not believe her story, that they didn't realize that this baboon is being used. The system manager and a delegation that consisted of inspector visited the station, and Jumper Wide and Jack were dismissed from duty. Again, Wide pleaded, unfortunately, or maybe a case of curiosity, forced the system manager to test the ability of Jack. A locomotive driver were given secret instructions, and all present waited to see if Jack would pass the strenuous test. Each time that the driver blasted a different signal, Jack would change the correct signal in points without fail. Jack even looked around in a different direction of oncoming trains to make sure that the correct lever and signal were changed. Jack passed the test with flying colors, and he and his boss were duly employed by authorities, and from that day on became known as Jack the Signalman.
That's so great.
Not only did he get his monthly rations from the government, but he also received an employee number.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, that's the movie, right? The movie is that's your ending.
Yeah, it's you got somebody like, everyone knows that baboons could never switch train tracks. I believe you. It's basically the Ghostbusters. It's Peck from the Ghostbusters.
Exactly.
Where it's like, this is a fraud.
That's the big moment at the end. Is he passes it and he gets his own he gets his job, and is he maybe in the movie version we'll give him a uniform, like he gets a little name tag and everything.
It ends with everybody clapping and cheering, and the baboon holds up his employee ID card and goes, "Aah!" Roll credits.
Yeah, it's more photos here. We're looking at the baboon pulling the signal.
That's amazing. That's one of the best stories I've ever heard in my entire life.
And somebody brought this up. It does make you wonder how many other human jobs could be replaced by monkey labor.
Yeah. Well, all we got to do is put, you know, monkeys in giant, you know, robot bodies, and then they'll be in charge of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry. You're fine, Bryce. You're fine.
Without fail, he would switch the cameras on command. He could detect the lull in conversation.
Like, you finish the podcast though, and it's done flawlessly. Then he walks up and he hands you like you know your phone with some notes he made for you though, and he's got some crits. Segment two on too long. Too self-deprecating. Act three.
Like, oh, Twitter account. Not enough posts. Need more engagements.
All right, don't make it real.
Oh yeah.
I got another story for you here. I want to do a little. Let's see the future thing. So. It's 2019, and E3 is going on.
Yeah,
I watched a little bit of that. I watched actually a little bit of the Google Stadia announcement before, which was interesting. You know, because like you know, the future gaming. Hot take here, guys. Gaming's only going to get bigger.
Whoa.
I was thinking, it's like, man, like you know, the graphics now. These things are super, super. Amazing. They're amazing. You know, the thing that's only missing now is just more nuance and stuff to performance capture, etc. But it's incredible. You know, you watch these things and it's like, what's E3 going to be like in 2029?
Let me make this bold hot take. Lots of free swag being given away. lots of streams that go too long. Lots of people who are not accustomed to being in front of the camera, clumsily saying their lines on camera. Well, what else?
Oh, but that was great this year. You didn't see the Keanu thing. The Keanu thing was very good this year.
Oh, yeah,
did exactly that.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah. They're putting him in Cyberpunk, and
well, yeah, but like he came out and did a.
They've trotted him out on stage,
and he did a bad delivery, like everybody else does.
He
was
delivered.
Charming. He was great, and probably drunk. And
Oh, dude, this sounds like a night attack breakdown. We'll have to take a look at this tomorrow.
We'll do that tomorrow.
It was great because it's like John Wick has done so much wonders for Keanu because now it's this. Hey, we all like this guy. I wish he had something relevant. Oh, we like this guy, and now he's got this super relevant, cool series, John Wick. You know.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah.
But yeah, that was just a fun. And you look at that, where like, you know, a scope of a game can bring out one of the now back to one of the top box office stars in the world, and that's the thing. You know, like oh, you know, we'll drop who knows how many you know tens of millions of dollars to get we'll get Keanu Reeves in our game because you know. Games are bigger than box office movies now.
Yeah, by a lot. Yeah. Man, maybe he might be a little drunk. That was a bit of a stumble.
He was. No, it was good. That's the swoop around the world.
He swoops his hand, and you almost, like, first of all, it's an exaggerated swoop, and you think, like, well, maybe he's not. And then you see the stumble double tap on the foot to steady himself.
But it was, you got to watch because he came out there. They loved him. He loved them. It was a fun, you know, fun exchange. And then also it's like, you know, just the scale. And it's one of these things, and I've said that the problem with gaming is that you have a certain part of the population which is huge into gaming, and you're aware of how big it is, and the other part of the population is like, yeah, I guess it's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of that is being being met by the mobile gaming market. And you're seeing more growth there, certainly not at an E3 type stage, but even then, you know, Bethesda had their announcement last night, and a bunch of the stuff they were talking about was mobile only games. You know, their card game is on mobile, they have an Elder Scrolls game on mobile, they're bringing back Commander Keen. They're making a new Commander Keen on mobile. And so I think the publishers are becoming more aware that mobile is a thing, but with the free to play model, a lot of the big names aren't don't see eye to eye with that business model yet.
Oh, speaking of free to play models, man, I tweeted it out, but if you guys haven't seen it, this takedown of the Game of Thrones officially licensed browser game, it's like 20 minutes long, and it is so good. I'm not normally a fan of just 20 minutes of crapping on other people's art, but when you see the depths of phoning it in that they do, and the obvious spelling errors, and the fact that it's clearly just a country, you know, a Chinese click farm
thing.
I mean,
that's what a lot of these games are, is they're just reskins of existing games so that they can put Final Fantasy or Game of Thrones on it.
Yeah. What I liked about this in particular is that he spent hours and hours giving it the old college try. Like, oh, sure. He really tried to treat it as a game and just and came back with literally unplayable.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because you have that, we'll just buy that property and, you know, skin it onto something else. And then you get other sides of it. Like Justin Roiland launched his game. I forget what was the title of it.
Trevor Saves the Universe.
World or something like that.
Universe. Yeah. And like, and that's interesting. Cause like, this is how many, Roiland seems to be pretty involved in the games he's worked on. And the idea of the super producer kind of creative guy who comes from one genre to another. And, you know, it's fascinating. Sure. You know, it's like, you know, kind of a very interesting thing to see what happens there.
How are the reviews on Trevor Saves the Universe?
I don't know. I think it's freshly new, so I haven't heard too much about it. But he's got his own company. He's got that Squanchtendo.
I think
company,
they changed the name to Squanch Games. I wonder why they would change their name.
I wonder. But yeah, and it's interesting also in terms of like what gaming's going to be in 10 years. Like the bespoke publisher as like a curator is something that's picking up a lot of traction now, with Devolver always kind of being like a de facto seal of quality on certain games. Annapurna is in a similar state.
I'd say for the most part Blizzard has maintained that. It is wild because there was a time that the publisher just flat out equaled the best games, like, you know, all the way back in the Atari days. Sure. Activision equals vastly superior to anything else you were going to get on the Atari.
Because they had the most money, and it was expensive to make games.
Right, and they also were the first publisher, I believe, to allow creators to put their names on it and actually get acknowledged. Yeah. But nowadays, you know, obviously Activision means something very different. Although the Blizzard part, because I guess Activision bought Blizzard, Blizzard has maintained that seal of quality.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Is, you know, you look at the games industry as a whole and how, you know, we have more data now to try to figure out like what makes a successful game company versus not. You know, the ones that have the hit and try to double down on that hit, and then you see the protracted development schedules running out of money, and there's like this the pattern you can see to where the ones that fail versus the ones you point out that say, well, we're gonna have a few different titles, you know, like a studio, like a movie studio that's gonna say, we're not just gonna do one movie a year and make it a big franchise thing, because if it fails, we're doomed. Mm-hmm. And figuring out how to manage that, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, then indie developers, so there's a lot of, still, I think there's more chances now for indies than there were before, more platforms.
Yeah.
You know? it's exciting.
The big talk this year, maybe you get a temperature check on the three of you guys. The big talk has been the streaming services, not just Stadia, but also xCloud. And a few weeks ago, Sony and Microsoft had a memo of cooperation that they will probably be teaming up on whatever Sony's new version of PlayStation Now will be. Not to mention Bethesda, one of the other things Bethesda talked about last night was it was very weird for them to talk about it. They are building this middleware called Orion that developers can put into their games to optimize them for game streaming. So reducing the amount of data that it takes to get an image out, they're reducing latency. It was weird for them to put that on their consumer briefing, but it's a sign that kind of everyone is really taking game streaming into consideration. What do you guys feel about that?
Well, so let me, because the Stadia thing, I'm like, oh, Google getting this is interesting. So let me go pay attention to this. And so Google Stadia, basically, it's a service. You pay them a fee, and then you use your Chromecast Ultra or your PC or your phone, and then you have a controller. Your controller connects with it. So the idea is that their servers are the ones serving the game to you, which, if you're Google, is a very Google way to do this. But then you get into the specs, and you see that, they're saying, oh, we're going to do 4K. I'm like, well, 4K streaming sounds great. I went to go use the tool, the download tool, the speed test tool to see if, what your speed will work for you. The speed test tool didn't work.
Oh, really?
So I'm like, well, that's a little bit of a fail right there, because you're like, I want to do I don't need a box. I'll do 4K streaming games on my computer here. And then it's like, maybe you will, maybe you won't. We're checking the connection right now. Yeah. Yours looks like it's going to work.
And this is a fiber connection.
I have good download, but horrible upload. I don't know what my latencies are. So I think that's a thing where, where Microsoft's like, hey, yeah, no, we're gonna put out an 8K box, versus, what's going on with.
Yeah.
XORN in the chat says playing via stream will fall hard because of crummy infrastructure around the world. I think that on this very program, we've talked about why that will cease to be true in a matter of as few as 4 or 5 years. I mean, once we get enough satellites, it's all these low orbit satellites and a giant mesh network. We've talked about the book Bold by Peter Diamandis, and he says that the right strategy is to build your to notice trends and then build your company, assuming that if something is trending down, it eventually becomes free. So Google was founded on the idea that that eventually storage will be free. And sure enough, they kept on buying used hard drives, and they were able to build and jump ahead. And likewise, bandwidth streaming services. Netflix built their company based on the idea that eventually everyone will have plenty of streaming capability, and whether or not we're there today, we'll be there essentially in 20 minutes with 5G across most of the country, and then within 5 years all around the world.
But it's not about getting – it's not necessarily about the last mile. It's also your distance to just the Google data center.
Correct. But specifically the is it Starlink? Is that what it's called, the Elon Musk thing?
Right.
I believe that will be even shorter latency than what most of us have right now.
It'll be faster than fiber.
Yeah, faster than fiber.
Well, I think but this has been a bet for Google forever, and they, I think, have at times been a lesser company for it, that they have bet on the idea that universal connectivity will make a lot of things obsolete. And it's because of that, they initially wanted Chrome to be an operating system. They did not look at it as just a browser, because they believed that you would only ever need to download things or not download, just to stream them off the internet, because that was their idea. And, I think that they really missed the boat on a couple different things, up to and including storage, which should have been a natural fit for them. And the question here is are they right now? Are they right for this? Are they right for gaming? And I think that there's some very clever stuff where, your controller, your Stadia controller, is the thing that's connecting directly to, their servers, basically. Yeah. So that should reduce latency. But I don't know. To me, it is a bold strategy to put some of the most loathed companies in between you and your customer. And if you are relying on streaming, then you are putting Comcast, AT&T, and Spectrum in between.
Yeah, I'm real curious, because, Google, as I say, the trying to stream, you know, playing 2 or 3 hours of a game and trying to do it at 4K and to have that push through, you know, Comcast or Spectrum, whatever, they're gonna probably have a new tier or something, you know, because of that. Mm-hmm. Because also, like, a big part of what Netflix does is Netflix has a lot of their movies located, you know, co-located near you, which I guess Google's doing the same with their gaming servers and stuff. So it certainly is, it leverages what Google can do well. But yeah, I think eventually we'll have great connections, but you know, when your competition is, hey, it's a $300 box that always works, you know, in theory.
Yeah. And it's you know, we're about a year out from the new Xboxes and PlayStations. Xbox was unveiled their code name that we already knew the code name for their next box, which is Scarlet. And they're, you know, they didn't say anything other than like, we're going to put an SSD in it. It's going to be faster. We're going to reduce load times, going to do higher resolutions, higher frame rates, which I think will be a big thing considering people just want consistent or good frame rates. But I think because the hardware is becoming more commoditized and because like hardware ray tracing is becoming mm-hmm. sort of the next big step in terms of graphic evolution, I think you're going to continue to see a pretty traditional offering in that camp for just playing at home on a box. And that's probably what people want, right? I mean, you look at Nintendo going from the Wii to the Wii U, which was going even crazier, and then to the Switch, which was much more traditional, and the huge response from people even today.
I guess really the upsell on the Stadia is the idea that I can play the same game on my tablet. I can play the same game everywhere. You know, sure. that the box is the thing I have to use at home. If I want to do a different version, then I got to go buy a new piece of hardware or a different thing. So I guess that's the appeal of the Stadia, is that.
Though, yeah, I mean, they're saying it's on one device, instant access, you know, not have to do an upload, updates and downloads and stuff. Though with like, I think both of the Xbox and the PlayStation have in-home streaming. Steam has a similar thing on the PC where you can turn on your computer and hook up your TV.
That's the thing, is the turn on your computer part, where if I'm away from home or whatever and I want to play the game or pick up the game or not do that, you know.
Sure. Well,
yeah. So, and that's the upside of Stadia. Stadia's like, oh, I got my phone, I got the game here right now, you know.
Yeah, and we don't know a lot about the coming X Cloud service. Mm-hmm. It does sound like they were hinting that you could use your console as a server in that way. But we don't have details on that stuff yet. So
yeah. Well, want to jump into picks?
Yeah. Hey, I got a pick. I don't know if any of you guys is necessarily up your alley, but there's a very funny web series that I got into over the weekend and into some of their back episodes. It's called Game of Zones. It's produced by Bleacher Report, and it's very well done animation of NBA. Drama and plot lines as reenacted in a Game of Thrones-esque universe, but it's a lot of funny just in jokes about you know, NBA stuff mixed with a lot of funny in jokes of Game of Thrones. You know, if you're not into both, I don't know how much it'll matter, but if you are into both, then you're gonna enjoy it.
Very cool. That's on YouTube.
Yeah. YouTube.com.
Hot damn, did I fall instantly in love with Good Omens. I mm-hmm. am almost done with the third episode. I watched the first episode twice because I enjoyed it so much and I wanted to watch it again with my wife. Just the first 10 minutes will have you either, if you're not already in love by the end of the first 10 minutes, then clearly you're not a human being and wow. And it's not going to take. But I think that you will be in love by the end of the first 10 minutes. It reminded me of everything that so many people love about, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The cast is all-star, the direction, the aesthetic. It takes a very heavy subject, Armageddon, and makes it so adorably whimsical. It's just it's wonderful. That fusion is delightful beyond words. Loved it.
Yeah, it's a very particular type of humor, I think.
It's a little try-hardy for me.
Oh, really?
Little.
I finished it over the weekend. I really liked that thing, and I'd like to see more of that thing.
The two leads are fantastic, sure. in different Sheen. Ways.
I love the cast, and I think that it's the show that when it's going, I like it. When it's giving me all the, you know, razzle dazzle, I don't know. I found myself kind of being brought out of connecting to the characters, but.
I have a pick. I watched a new movie on Netflix. Oh wait, you know what? I'm gonna not pick this because I have mediocre things to say about it. Black Mirror's back, everybody.
Yay!
Black Mirror's back, and Black Mirror is pretty cool. They got 3 new episodes.
Are they good?
They are pretty good. They are. I'll tell you this: light on science fiction this year on Black Mirror, but that also means that they kind of try to tell a little bit of a different types of stories. I mean, I think Charlie Brooker was out there saying that one of them, the Smithereens episode, when he wrote it, he wanted to do a story that had no science fiction, that was just a modern contemporary technology story, but is not futuristic or. But I think it's cool. The Miley Cyrus episode, I'm still very impressed with. She does a very good job in being a pop star who wants to, you know, she wants to be more than just a pop star, but then the machine around her has things. And it's actually that one, I don't remember the exact name of it, but it feels a lot like a Disney Channel movie, honestly. And it's like over an hour or so, because it's about both her as a pop star, but also these two teen girls, and they cross paths and save the day. Very good. And then Striking Vipers, the other one, is was surprising. I think that was a very cool thing that they do. So Black Mirror.
I watched that last night. That was a
little surprising, huh?
Well, I mean, I what I liked about Black Mirror was I always liked that Black Mirror always had, hey, here's the setup. Now we're going to have this really cool twist. We're going to change what this universe actually means or whatever like that.
Sure. These don't have that.
But I'd be spoiling it if I tell you, don't worry, that won't happen here. You're
yeah.
just going to get a Hallmark Channel kind of, I don't know, kind of thing. Like, but it's there's like my favorite line in there is the I even effed a blank. Oh, yes. I said this made the whole episode worth it. This made the episode worth it. So
now this season, and I think even if you look at last season, is a lot less bleak and kind of despair filled. I think they're really rounding the edges on some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that means that they're opening up to some different sort of endings. It doesn't have to always be the worst, you know, make you cry, bad ending.
Yeah, no, they've tried to – Booker said that he wanted to make them maybe less nihilistic and, you know, because I don't know. What was the one with Bryce Dallas Howard that just, like, I couldn't even finish. No. It was just too depressing.
That one has a ray of hope at the end, though.
I'll have to take a word on that. The world's too soon. Anybody else? Anyone else?
I think it's you.
It's me. All right, it's me. I'm going to give you an update. So I've been with the Oculus Quest for over a week now.
Ooh, how you like it?
I pick it up every day and use it, which for me in a video game or any kind of platform is a lot. I've got several of my friends have now gone out and got them, you know, either based upon my enthusiasm or having played them and all that. The Quest has been selling out everywhere, and it's it looks like it's on track to become like one of the biggest VR platforms there is now. We'll see. But it's as far as user base, how the enthusiasm for it. I love it. I absolutely love it. Hardware's been great. I've been having a lot of fun. You know, surprisingly, like Tilt Brush has been like my favorite thing in it. But you know, for you gamer types, there's, you know, a lot of fun stuff you're familiar with. You've already on VR, but just the portability of it, just not having to turn on your computer or hook up cables or whatever, just picking this thing up and putting it on is awesome.
You live in an apartment, right? How is the space issue?
It's fine. I mean, I would love to have a bigger area, but the system, what it does when you put it on, when you first put it on, It shows you your environment around you. It has four cameras on it, so it shows you your environment, and you pick up your controller, and that map has like, it has like, you know, crosses on the floor, and then you just aim your controller at the floor to mark out what you want your area to be that you're going to use, right? And then it saves it. So every time you put it on, it remembers your, it's called, you know, remembers the, it's called like the Guardian system, whatever, remembers where you are.
Oh, cool.
Works great. I got a little mat, one of those round VR mats, you know, with little, you know, plastic knobs on it, so you can tell with front and back, just to sort of, you know, make it easier on my feet. It's, yeah, I don't have a lot of space here, but it's been great with a bigger area. You know, my friend of mine came over here and he looked around like, oh, and he put on the VR thing. He's like, now I see why you cleaned. I'm like, well, yeah.
That's cool. I'm really surprised that we haven't seen anyone else make like I know HTC or not HTC, Valve has the Valve Index coming out or on the way out, which is another wired product. I'm surprised we haven't seen someone else try to chase after the completely wireless all on headset device.
Vive has the Odyssey or whatever. They have a system that they put out in China. They didn't put out here, and it uses, you know, there's the Google Daydream is the sixth degree of freedom.
But you put your phone into that, right?
What's that?
You put your phone into that, right?
No. It's not. It's a full system. No, it's not one of those gear things. No.
Oh.
Daydream's totally self-contained system, but it just uses one of these controllers. So it's not like that, you know, the Quest, which has the full wrist style, you know, knuckle, whatever kind of controller. So this had pretty good tracking and stuff for it, but that was their attempt at, or the Daydream Mirage Solo, but I don't know. They didn't, like a lot of Google things, they get excited about something and then they're not so excited about it. Where, you know, Quest, like I said, they've been selling out like crazy. So, you know, if people are still using it 3 or 4 months from now, you know, I think it's going to be a very viable platform. And we'll see. I think, you know, like I said, the Vive Odyssey or whatever, I think that's supposed to come out in like September or something. So we'll see. I'm gonna do one more pick just because this is a cool Google product, by the way. Have you seen Live Transcribe?
No.
So Live Transcribe, I've been, you know, working forever, is, you know, like I had my app for adding punctuation, which Live Transcribe adds punctuation in real time.
Oh, I know, that was forever been your biggest beef, and you wanted. It's hard to write books without being able to use proper punctuation. I just want to keep on watching it happen. This is amazing.
Yeah. It's really good. It doesn't do like what my story voice thing does and figure out, you know, like, hey, there need to be quote marks in here, or this is dialogue. It's not for writing books, but if you want something that does a damn good job of transcription, this is amazing, and there's no need to pay somebody to transcribe things anymore. It is a free app for the Android platform, so it is super, super helpful. Originally, it was designed for people who are, you know, with, you know, speech or hearing issues, to make it easier to basically, you know, communicate with people. But the punctuation on here is fantastic. They used machine learning, put millions and millions and millions of bits of text in there with punctuation and stuff in there to figure out where best it goes into. And damn, it's good.
Wow. Yeah, the you just had it pulled up on the screen and we could see it.
Is there any way to access this at all outside of having an Android device?
Not yet. Maybe they might. Google has in their speech, their text to speech or speech to text API, they do have punctuation, but every time I play with it, it doesn't work very well. So I don't know if they're using the same neural network to do this as they're using this for. I'm sure eventually it'll make its way elsewhere. But I bought an Android phone to like do, you know, for Google Fi. But, you know, the upside, though, is it's like, I mean, this was like a $99 Android phone. And it works fine. Yeah. So worth it alone for that if you really, really want some transcription.
Neat.
There you go.
Nice.
All right. It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.